Hello, everyone, and welcome to the With Chinese Characteristics podcast. I'm Natalie.
I'm Cherry.
Together, we talk about topics with Chinese characteristics. And this week, we have yet another Water Margin
Book Club episode.
I'm trying to figure out the sound effect. Yay! Water Margin! So, we have a new podcast recording thing, and it does sound effects.
Yeah. We're just playing with it.
I just wanted to try it out. Yeah. Please don't stop listening to the podcast because I did that applause one time. Anyway, we're on chapter 4.
Yeah.
And if you're just tuning in, we're doing chapter by chapter of The Water Margin, which is a 1,000-something page Chinese epic from 600 years ago, mm-hmm. written during the Ming Dynasty, set in the Northern Song Dynasty.
A real classic.
It's written in vernacular Chinese, mm-hmm. the common people's language. And it's about a group of bandits and tough dudes and ladies mm-hmm. can't fit in with normal society.
No.
End up starting a bandit army on a mountain.
Yeah. Not literally on a mountain.
Well, it's called Mount.
I know, but that's just the name of the city. I know. It sounds better if they say they have went up the mountain
went up Mount Leon.
Formed the banditry.
Yeah.
So yeah, I take it back.
Yeah. So we're on chapter 4.
Yay. And what's the name of the chapter 4, Natalie?
It is Sagacious Lu puts Mount Wutai in an uproar. Squire Zhao repairs Wenshu Monastery. So this is another Lu Da chapter.
Yeah.
We're going to be seeing.
The Sagacious Lu is Lu Da here.
Yeah, it's Lu
Only
Da.
That, I think maybe a clue. He's getting a new name.
Yeah.
A new identity.
A Buddhist name.
Yeah.
So Lu Da, our quote unquote hero. He was on the run for having beaten the Lord of the West to death in the middle of the street with 3 blows.
Mm.
Killed the Lord of the West in 3 blows. He eventually arrived in Yanmen City in Daijo after traveling for about 2 months,
mm-hmm.
where he is listening to an announcement of a poster, because he can't read, calling out a bounty announcement for him.
Yeah.
But he is saved, Cherry, at the end of the last chapter.
Yeah.
And who is he saved by?
Old Jean.
Old Jean, the same guy he helped in chapter 3.
Yeah.
Old Jean's daughter was kind of in a fake marriage and they didn't pay Old Jean the dowry.
Mm-hmm. And instead they said they actually did pay and now they owe them the dowry.
Yes.
Because the lady is not married, actually, to the Lord of the West.
It was all a big scheme.
Yeah.
They were cheated. Old Jean didn't get a good price for his daughter.
No. Nope.
So, but Lu Da helped him out.
Mm.
But now Old Jean found a really rich guy
mm-hmm.
for his daughter.
Yeah.
Not to be his wife, but to be his mistress.
Yeah.
But this is China, right? This is Asia. Having a mistress is not a problem.
No.
You know, it can be prestigious. You pay them well.
Yeah.
It was interesting. Somebody was telling me about a scandal one time in Japan where the prime minister had a mistress.
Okay.
And the issue wasn't that they had the mistress. The issue is that they were cheap with their mistress. And that's what
Wait, how long ago was this?
I can't remember. I think it was actually not that long ago.
Okay.
But there were people were upset that he was cheap with the mistress.
It's like he wasn't doing it properly.
Yeah, I mean, he's the prime minister. You know, he didn't need to be so stingy.
With the mistress.
Yeah. So anyway, this is totally all official and above board.
Yeah.
In China, there's nothing bad about being the mistress of a wealthy guy.
Mm-hmm. No. And one could argue this is a good, better deal for Old Jean. And yes, maybe the lady, comparatively speaking.
Yes.
Compared to being the not-to-be wife of the Lord of the West and having owed a big debt to him.
Yes, exactly.
A fake debt.
And he's just a butcher, Cherry.
He was just a butcher. He employed 10 or so people, but...
He's a craftsperson.
This yeah, is not exactly.
Like a nobleman.
But
so,
Squire Zhao, though. Squire Zhao is...
Is rich.
Very rich, apparently. And he bought a new... Like a whole house just for Old Jean. And his mistress.
I think mostly for the mistress. I think Old Jean gets to stay there too.
Well, you know, Old Jean's really making great on this deal. So, you know, his daughter seems to be his meal ticket everywhere he goes. or not meal ticket, right? All the opposite. So I guess their fates are tied. But
but they invite Lu Da to this new house that was bought for them.
Yes.
Because they treat him, they're like, you're our savior.
Yeah.
And they have a shrine to Lu Da.
Yeah.
They kowtow him. They say, normally we kowtow to your shrine twice a day.
Yeah.
We burn incense to it.
Pray for your house.
Yes.
Yeah.
So Lu Da's drinking with them.
Yeah.
You know, having a good time. They have servants now and all that.
Mm-hmm.
When a group of armed men show up outside.
Yeah. And why?
Because they heard there's some rough looking scruffy dude who
that has entered the mistress's house.
Entered the mistress's house, and they're drinking wine.
Yeah.
And
the whole town's on the outlook for the interest of Squire Jot to make sure no shenanigans is going on here.
No shenanigans happen with his new mistress.
Yeah.
So Lil Dawes ready to fight them.
Yeah.
But old Gene explains the situation, and Squire Jot has heard of Lil Dawes.
Yeah.
Tough Dudes Network, and said,
he heard him from the old Gene.
I know, but that's part of the network,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, sure, that's part of the network.
That's
now,
how
yeah.
these names get around, Sherry.
Yeah, yeah. Through words of mouth.
And he says, meeting a man of fame is better than just hearing his name, which yeah. is a thing we've heard before. Also, one thing is interesting, in the English version, Jade Lotus is the daughter.
Yeah.
But now, I think maybe because she is a mistress now, she's a purchased woman.
Yeah.
She's now just referred to as daughter or girl.
Yeah.
Like the girl.
No need for the name anymore.
Yeah.
There was barely a need for the name beforehand. No,
it's like the couch, the chair, like yeah,
she's part of the furniture, right? This is how it works in the patriarchal society.
Old Jin gets to keep his name though.
Yeah.
So they drink more, and then eventually Squire Jot invites Lada to come to his manor in yeah. the countryside.
Right. Because he doesn't actually live at the house in the city
no.
where the mistress stays.
And the police are sniffing around, yeah. you know. Mm. Even though this is quite far. This is 60 days travel, so I guess they really...
They haven't, I mean, this is a very outrageous murder.
In the middle of the street.
In the middle of the street, under broad daylight.
Yeah.
There are hundreds of witnesses.
Yeah, and an army
They
major.
Can't just let this go.
Exactly. Well, Squire Jot can let it go, because yeah. he's like, why don't you come to my little countryside
Yeah, he doesn't
manor.
Seem to have any problems that yeah. just beat someone to death in the street.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lada goes to the manor.
Yeah.
Squire Jot, because Squire Jot enjoys jousting. He enjoys men of valor.
Yeah.
Much like Shujin earlier chapter.
Mm-hmm.
He just can't help it. He sees a tough
no, he
dude.
He can't help it. No.
A tough dude in distress. It's like a damsel in distress.
Yeah.
It's a tough dude in distress. He has to drop
everything. He has to rescue them.
He has to rescue them. There's only so many tough dudes in China, Cherry. He can't let one get away.
Apparently not.
So, but eventually, after about a week of whining and dining,
yeah.
the police start sniffing around Squire Jow's manor too.
Wow.
So
they followed his tail. They're closing in.
Yeah.
So Squire Jot needs to now figure something out.
This is what Squire Jot says. He says, because Lil Da's like, just let me go. You know, just yeah. I'll just leave.
Mm.
Squire Jot says, things might turn out badly if I kept you here, Major, the squire admitted. Yet if I don't, I'll lose a lot of face. I have another idea. It's foolproof and will give you complete protection, but maybe you won't be willing. The plan, Cherry?
Yeah.
Lil Da becomes a monk.
Wow.
And lives the rest of his life at a Buddhist
I
monastery.
I don't know if I can picture that, but maybe Squire Jot knows something that I don't.
So, obviously, monasteries, you know, our listeners might be more familiar with like the Western concept, like Catholic monasteries, but, you know, there's some similarities between a Buddhist monastery
yeah.
or a Taoist monastery and a Catholic one. They're both supposed to have some separation from the real world.
Yeah.
If you become a monk, you're becoming a new person, you know, and you're dedicated.
You're sort of outside the system
Outside
now.
The system, you're dedicated to this new thing. Sometimes you get a new name, and to some extent, your troubles sort of leave you at the door. If they go looking for Lil Da, they're like, Lil Da's not here. You know, we only have monk so-and-so. It's not a bad plan.
But
it's maybe a bad plan for Lil Da.
Yeah.
So, but it is a very generous offer, because Cherry was telling me about that Mount Wutai, which is where the monastery is,
yeah.
that Squire Jot has a thing for, is a very famous monastery.
I don't know if he has a thing for it. Sounds like this is like his lover or something.
Well, he donates a lot of money, and he has a connection. And he has a certificate.
Yeah.
Which is not hard to get. So both of these things, the connection.
The certificate is hard to get.
Yes, the certificate is hard to get. And his connection to the monastery is a very grand.
Close one.
Expensive monastery.
Yeah. Shall we introduce?
Yeah, why don't you talk a little bit about it?
This is the background of the stage where Luda is about to enter, okay? Yeah. So, Mount Wutai is not just one mountain, okay? Wutai literally means five platforms or five stages.
Five peaks.
So, Mount Wutai is a landscape of five peaks with flat tops, which is why it's called Tai. And that area is home to 41 monasteries, some bigger ones, some smaller ones, all pretty prestigious. The temples have been built on this site from the 1st century AD to the early 20th century. And a lot of them still exist today. And the buildings on the site...
It's a UNESCO heritage site today.
So. Oh, wow. Well,
maybe. Internationally recognized.
Yes, very famous still. So the buildings on the site catalog the ways in which Buddhist architecture developed and influenced even imperial palace building in China over a million, for over a millennium. Many.
Millennia. I thought we were upgrading the 5,000 years
millennia,
of Chinese
millennium. Millennium. No, upgrading.
Million years of Chinese history.
Exactly. Yeah. It's very prestigious. Many mm-hmm. emperors in Chinese history have visited the Wutai Mountain monasteries. It has a vast collection of Buddhism scriptures written in different languages, Mandarin Chinese, Mongolian, Tibetan. Mm. So, you know, overall, just very prestigious, important cultural site. And Luda really is getting a very good deal here.
Yeah.
Not anyone can just become a monk, let alone a monk in a monastery on the Wutai Mountain.
Yeah.
So how does he become a monk, though? It's not just Squire Zhao says you should be a monk, and then he introduces him. He requires a certificate.
Mm-hmm.
A government-issued, centrally managed certificate. Very bureaucratic.
Very hard to get.
The system. Very hard to get. So it was Squire Zhao's certificate. Squire Zhao, not just himself, has a close connection with the temple, mm-hmm. right? But generations of the Zhao family, the ancestors, have always donated and patroned the temple. So, you know, he's a big name around it. And he is, what's the name of the lead monk?
The abbot.
He's like, the abbot's like my brother. Squire Zhao had purchased a certificate a while ago. Mm-hmm. The spot is still empty. There's no name on it. And he's like, Luda, this one is yours. And he doesn't really ask if Luda wants it. I mean, he's like, oh yeah, I have a plan, right? But Luda, I don't feel like Luda knows what he's in for.
I think Luda sort of assumes he's going to just lie low at the monastery for a while.
Yeah, exactly.
Not
yeah.
like this is his entire new profession.
No, he doesn't get like this is a yeah. whole different system.
And he also doesn't get, I think, yeah, how expensive and difficult yeah. to get these certificates are.
Yes. So much like Gao Qiu, if you remember, our football player
yeah.
that started this whole book. Gao Qiu was a playboy, right? Yeah. And he goes to a place, stays at a man's house, and the government official or whatever goes, oh, this guy's trouble, right?
Yeah.
I better refer him to someone higher up the chain
yeah.
so that they can take care of him. And it's not my troubles anymore. Much like that. Obviously, Squire Zhao is very rich, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's so prestigious, this monastery. And the certificate is very expensive. So this is a rare position to be in. So Luda, the murderer, the alleged, I guess, I don't know. I don't know if it's alleged. But I obviously, mean, we went through a whole chapter how he killed the guy.
Yeah.
But the murderer, right? The wanted, now gets this opportunity to be in an even more prestigious, rare position where yes. he will literally become basically untouchable from the law and order, right? Yeah. So I don't think he gets how like lucky he is. But, you know, he's a hero character. Of course, he's lucky.
And also, are you going to talk about financially?
Yes. So let's talk about the certificate
yeah.
that Zhao Yuanhua is giving to Lu Da. It is called Du Die in Chinese, and it is issued by the government. The system has started a long time ago in China, and during the Tang Dynasty, there was an actual independent department that was set up to run the system.
Mm.
It's called the Ministry of Rites, R-I-T-E-S.
Okay.
And in order to become a monk, there is one way to do it, which is to pass exams. There's not just a knowledge examination, but also a character examination.
Mm.
Just think of it as a different type of the imperial exam system
yeah.
to become a government official. So you pass the exams, you pass the moral test, right? And then you can obtain the qualification to become a monk. There will be a ceremony and all that. So that's one way to become it.
Yeah,
that's the rare case for maybe some peasants, you know, children or whatever, outcasts of society who don't really have the connections. It's still a narrow path.
Yeah.
What else you can do, though, is that you can buy these certificates. They're for sale, right? And it's a revenue stream for the court. They can get really expensive. They get traded on the black market all the time.
Mm-hmm.
You can bribe people with it, right? And you could give people a certificate. But there's a limited number of these certificates that goes around, which also is why they can get really expensive. It has its costs. Being a monk means you don't pay tax. You're outside the system. Like Luda, you will no yeah. longer be wanted for murder.
yeah.
Lucky you. And this is Imperial China, right? Just being a man, say what you will about Imperial China, a tax system was complete.
Yeah.
They had a complete implemented tax system for a long time. They got to figure it out. So just being a working age man or a farmer would mean that you already owe tax by existing, right? Yeah. So being a monk, it means you don't owe any taxes. And a monastery is not just a, you know, like a group of monks. It's often an estate. It can own farms around the monastery. Yeah. It's basically an employer of the town sometimes, like thinking of a military base in America, for example.
Cherry's been watching Downton Abbey.
I have.
What's an abbey, Cherry?
An estate.
No, what's it? An abbey is...
I don't know.
Where monks... It's a monastery.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Downton Abbey.
Okay, well, I didn't know that.
I think an abbey is for female monks.
Okay, well, there's no female monks, but I get the...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's tradition, right?
Yeah.
So, much like Downton Abbey.
Yeah.
A monastery is a big employee, right? Employer. And not everyone, like the farmers that work on the farm that is owned by the monastery is not a monk. And, you know, and obviously they're just a regular employee, but the income from the farms and the estates are tax exempt too. So you can see it's quite a good deal.
And also,
so you're gonna rich and the powerful often have a lot of connections, right? And sometimes people will even be like, this is actually my farm, but like, I'll just put it under the estate of the monastery and then we'll do some deals.
There's some stuff you can do. And also, there's all sorts of other things besides physical taxes that you're often required to do in medieval China. Like maybe you have to do labor, right? Maybe there, you know, you have to go, you know, build a road and they just, you know, you have to do a certain number of days per year.
Yeah.
Or maybe there's
a war and you're a Mulan and every family must have one son, right? But if you're a monk, you're not under that in that system.
And also when things change hands or there's, you know, they don't get looted very often. So they have a lot of money inside the monastery. Everyone's always giving them gifts.
Exactly. So these certificates, right? The path to get in the system.
Mm-hmm.
It means connections, it means prestige. So not just like any peasant can do it. It's a rich people's game.
Yeah.
Famously, Yue Fei, the Chinese military general who lived during the Song Dynasty, a national hero, right? Who led the war effort against the Jurchen-ruled Jing Dynasty in northern China, was once rewarded with 200 certificates for his contributions to his country.
Mm.
Not like they're giving him like an estate, you know? Yeah. They're not like they're giving him a new title or money. They're like, here are 200 certificates, and you should do what you will with it.
Well, that's also a convenient way for the government because they don't have any money on hand.
Yeah.
They can just give the certificate.
This is like the national debt they're sending out, right? Obviously, they will lose some tax income, but like they will issue this for now.
Yeah.
You know?
And somebody else will buy them off him.
And get through a rainy day, you know? So I guess this is all just to say this certificate that Lu Dai is receiving from Squire Zhao is quite a big deal.
Yeah.
Yeah, so and Squire Zhao must be really rich.
It could be more money than otherwise Lu Dai would ever see in his entire life.
It's very possible, right? So what do you think Lu Dai would do with this rare,
I think
prestigious opportunity? Do you think he's going to seize the opportunity and become a new person?
I think he's really going to turn his life around.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
I think he's really going to turn his life around.
I have faith in him.
Yeah, stop the booze, you know, all that.
So what happens next, Natalie?
Squire Zhao buys Lu Dai all the robes and all these little gifts, and you need all these, you know, little accoutrements to be a monk.
Yeah.
Including gifts for the abbot. They head there. Lu Dai, who again does not even know how to read, is very unprepared, but he tries his best. You know, they come
in. He did try a little bit, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. So they come in, they meet the abbot. You know, Squire Zhao sits in the honor seats for guests, and Lu Dai just plops down too.
Yeah.
And Squire Zhao's like, Lu Dai, you know, you're coming here to become a monk.
Yeah, maybe sit over there.
Which means he has to stand up.
Yeah.
And Lu Dai's like, oh, sorry, I didn't know. So Lu Dai stands there respectfully.
Yeah, which is also weird because Lu Dai was a military officer. There was a chain of command.
Yes.
It's not like Lu Dai would just sit down like casually like in front of a general.
And be like, hey, bro.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe he would, but you know.
But I don't know how he could make it this far.
Maybe he's
just
that.
Just hero characters, you know.
I think he's just that good at killing people. That they just overlooked this other stuff. So this is how Zhao explains the situation to the abbot. He says, he formerly was a military officer, but because of many difficulties, he wants to have done with mundane affairs and become a monk.
You mean he murdered someone?
Yeah, he murdered a guy in the street.
Many difficulties.
The abbot says, oh, that's great. He'll add luster to our monastery. Like, it'll add character, right?
Sure.
It's a man of violence giving up the sword to find inner peace. Right?
I have no doubt he will add some characters, Natalie. Yeah. I just don't know if he's going to be the type that the abbot wanted or expected.
The monks see Lu Dai, though, with his big crazy beard, and he's like huge and buff.
Yeah.
And they're like, that new applicant is a savage looking brute.
Yeah.
They said, if we accept him, he's sure to cause trouble. The abbot says, he's a cousin of Squire Zhao, our patron. How can we refuse?
Mm-hmm.
Hold your doubts while I look into the matter. So the abbot looks into the matter. He lights a stick of incense.
How does he look into the matter?
He lights the incense and he sat cross-legged on a couch. Muttering an incantation, he went into a trance. By the time the incense was consumed, he returned.
So he's like, let me ask upstairs.
I mean, he's the abbot. You know, if he can't ask upstairs, then who can, right?
Yeah. It's very transactional. It's like a Catholic priest goes like, yeah, I'll talk to God. I'll pass down God's ideas and words and how we should follow his lead.
So he says, you can go ahead with the ordination.
Yeah.
So the abbot, this man represents a star in heaven. His heart is honest. Even though his appearance is savage and his life has been troubled, he will eventually become purified and attain sainthood.
Mm.
None of you is his equal. Mark my words. Let no one dissent. So, you know, he's the abbot. He communed with, you know,
the Buddha.
The ancestors, the spirits,
whoever is up there.
I mean, it's always kind of hard to say because, like, there is so much overlap between Buddhism and Taoism.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's a little vague, you know, what he's actually doing here.
Mm-hmm. But he's talking to whoever's upstairs.
Yeah, basically. He's talking to whoever's upstairs.
Yeah.
But the funny part is the other monks are not having it.
No. They're not buying this.
Yeah. They say, the abbot is only covering up his faults, but we'll have to do as he says. We can only advise. If he won't listen, that's up to him.
Yeah.
So it's like if the Pope was like, yeah, I asked God and this is what, and the cardinals are like, yeah, right.
The scene, like the camera turns to cut scene to the other priests. They're talking amongst themselves.
The other
priests
are all sitting outside smoking and they're like, yeah, this is some BS.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. He's
I don't buy it. Yeah.
He just wants the money from Squire Zhao. So Le Da gets ordained as a monk on an auspicious day after Zhao pays a lot of silver.
Mm-hmm.
They knot and cut off his hair, but Le Da tries to stop them from removing his beard. This is from the book.
Yeah.
Hear me, the abbot said sternly from his dais. Leave not a single blade of grass. Let the six roots of desire be torn out. All must be shaven clean away, lest they manifest themselves again, he intoned. Off with it, he ordered.
Yeah. So this is Imperial China.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Confucius
China. One's hair, it's a big deal. The first ever episode we did on this podcast was talking about the pigtail ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
Where in the Qing, well, that was in America. But, you know, the pigtail is the
hairstyle forced the on braid Chinese men. Was
the, yes, on Han ethnic men.
Yeah.
And the significance of it is that your hair, part of your body, was a gift from your parents.
Yes.
With whom your biggest and most important final duty lies.
Yeah.
In a Confucian society, in Confucius beliefs, which is the filial duty.
Yes.
So how dare you, right? This is a great offense and this is just ungrateful and just you should not, and it's shameful.
Also
shameful. You should not cut off your hair.
Or even in the Three Kingdoms, one of the famous generals, he gets shot in the eye with an arrow and he pulls the arrow out with his eye in it and then he eats his eye because he's like, this eye was given to me.
By my parents.
I can't just toss it out. I have to eat it.
Yeah.
And it eats his eye off the arrow. So this is a serious thing to cut off your hair, right?
Yes. So, but obviously we also have the Buddhist Chinese brand of Buddhism, which mm-hmm. you shave with your hair.
Yeah.
And I think it speaks to the theme of like, you are going from one system, the Confucius Imperial China.
Yes.
Into the gate of the Buddha, right?
And in some ways you're separating yourself from your family.
Yeah.
And from
filial
duty, right?
Yes.
So you're not supposed to even have that attachment necessarily to, you know, your parents, for example.
Humanly connections.
So, I mean, you will, and you'll probably use the resources of the monastery to help get some kickback.
But you're supposedly. So the six roots you were talking about.
Yeah.
You want to know which six?
Let's hear them.
It's sight, sound, smell, taste, texture, which is touching sense. Okay. And the last one, but maybe the most important one, spirit.
Mm.
So Lu Da's got to clear out all six of his
channels
of how he interacts with the world, right?
Those are all avenues of desire
yes.
and temptation.
Exactly. It's not like you cut your ears off, right?
Yeah.
Like, But like, you gotta clear up the tunnels.
Yeah.
It's gotta be pure from now on.
So now you just put good things in them.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. No temptations.
No temptations.
Yeah. Of like wine or meat or like, you know, any of the stuff that Luda so loves. Yeah. I don't know. We don't know if he loves fornicating yet, but he certainly loves violence. So
he does love violence.
Yeah. So they do the ceremony. They shave off his beard. He lost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, Luda maybe does like women though, because he will be seen. And I think we'll see in the next chapter too. He will drop everything.
To save a damsel in distress.
Yeah. So Luda gets shaved. Mm. Luda gets shaved and they knot and cut off his hair. He gets the new name Sagacious as his Buddhist name.
Yeah, Lu Zhishen.
And he has to swear to the rules of conduct of the monastery.
And what are they?
It's from the book. Take refuge in Buddha, the law, and the monastic order. These are the three refuges.
Mm-hmm.
Do not kill, steal, fornicate, drink, or lie. These are the five precepts.
Yeah.
Luda didn't know he was supposed to answer, I shall, to each of the first three. And I shall not to each of the last five. So he just says, I'll remember.
Yeah.
Everyone
He's
laughed.
He's like, sure, why not?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. That's great. Yeah. Yeah, I'll do those.
Yeah, I'll do that. Whatever you said.
Yeah. So all the monks laugh. They can't help it. Zhao leaves, but not without giving Luda some words of wisdom.
Mm, Luda could have used them.
He says, your life must be different from now on, brother. Be restrained in all things. Under no circumstances, be proud. Otherwise, it will be hard for us to see each other again. Take good care of yourself. I'll send you warm clothing from time to time.
Square Jaw has a lot of faith in Luda.
Yeah. And under no circumstances, be proud. Luda says, no need to tell me, brother. I'll behave. Do you think Luda's going to behave, Cherry?
I don't know. I at this point, I don't know if he tried, but maybe he tried a little. But he's just too much of a character.
He does his best.
Sure.
So immediately after the ceremony, Luda goes to the meditation room.
Yeah.
Which I think is also where you sleep, but it's like a combined, you're also supposed to meditate there during meditation time.
Yeah.
It's part of your work of the monastery, it's spiritual, right?
Yes.
Just like at a Catholic monastery, you know, you have to do a certain amount of...
You don't just lie down. You sit there, you meditate, it's work.
Yeah. You chant,
probably. It's your duty, to better yourself.
So he just goes there and plops down.
Yeah.
The monks try to wake him up, but he's just like, essentially like, piss off.
Yeah.
Leave me alone. They want to complain to the abbot, but the elder says the abbot will just ignore it.
Yeah.
Because the abbot thinks he's a saint.
Yes.
So the monks...
Also comes with the connection of Squire Zhao.
Yes.
Big patron.
Yeah, big money. The monks went back. Since no one reprimanded him, Sagacious sprawled out on his bed every night and slept snoring thunderously. When he had to relieve himself, he made a terrible racket getting up.
Yeah.
He pissed and crapped behind one of the halls. His filth was all over the place.
Yeah. Nally asked me to check the Chinese version.
I was like,
did they actually say that?
Yeah. I was like,
yeah, they did. Getting it all over the place.
Did some guy 600 years ago try to really write like Luda pissed and crapped everywhere?
Yeah, no, they did. So yeah, they also said that when Luda lies down on the bed, the meditation like pod, he's like, he lied down and stretched himself out like a cross. Whizzing his legs. It's actually a literal, like, it is a thing.
He's sprawled as much as physically possible.
With your arms and legs all in four different directions.
Like the Da Vinci drawing.
Yeah, yeah. He's taking up space, right? Yeah. He's
spreading.
He's spreading. He's man-spreading.
Yeah.
Quite literally.
And part of this, I think...
So Luda is fitting in well at
the... the monastery.
The monastery.
And part of the implication of all this is not just that Luda... is rude, but also all of his stuff is impacting what would be seen as the very real purpose of the monastery, which is for everyone to improve their spiritual journey and increase the, you know, one of the things, you know, you reincarnate Buddhism.
Yeah.
You know, maybe you don't achieve enlightenment this time, but if you work on it, you know, maybe
eventually.
You get a little closer.
Yeah.
Maybe you reincarnate again and maybe you get it eventually.
Yeah.
So Luda is really just messing up everyone's spiritual journey here by snoring and just crapping everywhere and all of that. So the abbot's assistant reported the matter. That Lu has no manners. He's not in the least like a man who's left the material world. How can we keep a fellow like that in our monastery? Nonsense, retorted the abbot. Don't forget our donor's request. Sagacious will change later on. No one dared argue.
I just can't bear that his name is, we have to call him Sagacious now.
He's a monk, Chair. He's left the material world.
Yeah. It's very hard to think of Luda as Sagacious.
Yeah. So after a few months of this, things start to sink in for Loda. This isn't something he's doing just to lay low for a while. He's going to be a monk forever. And as time goes on, Squire Zhao is probably going to forget about him.
Mm-hmm.
He decides what he really needs is some wine.
Yeah.
It's been a couple of months. He hasn't had any wine.
Yeah.
You know, they have vegetarian food at the monastery.
Yeah.
He's a big guy. He's hungry.
Very, yeah.
That's the whole reason he didn't want to go to jail, Cherry.
Yeah. No one's going to bring him food.
They weren't going to have enough food. So he starts walking around outside the monastery. And he notices a wine cellar coming up, singing a song.
Yeah.
And the song that the wine cellar was singing, Cherry was saying, is actually written probably after the water margin is set.
They think, when I say they, I mean like scholars and stuff, think that it was written in the Ming Dynasty, which is after the Song Dynasty.
Yeah. So maybe a little bit of a historical anachronism.
Yes. However, though, I wouldn't blame it because the event that was described in the poem, the song, was a long time ago. So it does predate this historical period.
Mm.
It was the story, if you're interested, Xiang Yu, this war hero, I guess, who failed, and Lady Yu, his lover. And it's basically, let's just say, it's a story of heroes at the end of the road with no more options. They're tragic and desolate.
Just like Lu Da.
Yes, exactly. I think there is some of that, like referencing here.
Lu Da's at the end of his road. He needs some wine.
Yes.
So he asked the wine seller to sell him some wine.
Yeah.
And it's like, imagine like a guy with a pole with two buckets on it.
Yeah.
On either end, taking the wine up to the monastery. But apparently, the wine is only for the staff of the monastery. As you were saying, there's lots of people who work there that aren't monks.
Yeah.
And they can drink, right? They're allowed to have booze.
Yeah.
But the abbot essentially owns, and the extension of the monastery essentially owns the entire surrounding area. Including
Well, they're the employers of the, they're the boss.
And they're also the bank.
Yeah, they're also the bank, yeah.
They're the bank, and he says, you know, if the abbot finds out I've sold wine to a monk, he'll basically take my house away.
Yeah, he will ban me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he'll be desolate.
Yeah.
So Luda has a solution.
Yeah.
He just kicks the guy in the crotch and just takes his wine.
You mean his solution is just to rob?
Just violence.
Just violence. Yeah. Just take it.
Which is against one of the Buddha's precepts here. I think it's don't steal.
Well, I think he's breaking
steal.
More than one rule.
Yeah. Also no violence.
Yeah.
So he kicks the guy in the crotch and takes his wine. And from the book it says, the man clapped both of his hands to his injured parts and dropped to a squatting position.
Poor guy.
He couldn't straighten for some time.
No.
So Lada drinks an entire bucket of the wine.
Yeah.
And the wine seller then splits up the remaining wine between the two buckets to try and make it look a little bit better.
Yeah.
And he goes up to the monastery.
I think one thing we learned about Luda is that he doesn't do anything in moderation.
No.
He really does it to the extreme.
Yeah.
He's got to drink a whole bucket. He's got to beat someone to death. You know, like we'll see what he does next.
So I like the descriptions of drunkenness in this chapter.
Yeah.
Because Luda drinks the wine. He doesn't immediately go crazy.
Mm-mm.
He drinks the wine. And he lies around for a while.
Yeah.
Right?
Which might be realistic.
Which, you know, you take Which a while is, to get,
yeah.
to get, you know. So he, and then he, after a while, you know, he's lying there. He gets super drunk. And then he, like, starts stripping and, like, marching back up to the monastery, probably, you know, singing. He says he's swinging his arms wildly.
Yeah, no, he's just very happy.
Yeah, he's just having a good time.
He hadn't had a taste of wine for however many months, 6 months.
Yeah, probably. I think it said something like that. And then also, remember, this is not... This wine is strong stuff. Even a bucket of, like, red wine would be strong. But this is Huangzhou. We talked about it in our booze episode. It's going to be something like 18 to 20%.
Yes.
And he drank a whole bucket of it.
So now it's getting to his head.
The gatekeepers immediately realize he is drunk and are like, look, you're going to get punished and maybe expelled if you're drunk. And we're going to get punished too. So why don't you just go sleep it off somewhere?
Yeah.
And Le Da just starts beating them up.
Right. Which, it was a good solution, by the way.
Yeah.
Luda doesn't get in trouble. No one gets in trouble.
No.
But Luda is like, no.
No. So, the book...
For some reason.
The book says, and I quote, the situation looked bad. So, he starts breaking his way in to the monastery.
Yeah.
The staff realizes what's happening. The supervisor, who I think is a monk, they realize what's happening.
Yeah.
And they're like, okay, we're just going to get everybody in the monastery, all the non-monks... And we're going to fight Lada.
Yeah.
So the supervisor, this is from the book, had summoned the caretakers, cooks, janitors, and sedan chair carriers, nearly 30 men.
Yeah.
Now armed with staves, like sticks, They poured out of the western cloister and rushed to meet Lu. The ex-major strode towards them with a thunderous roar. They didn't know he had been an army officer. He sprang at them so fiercely, they fled in confusion into the suture hall and closed the lattice door. It's like a little ornate little door.
Yeah, so Lu Da, 1 to 30.
Yeah.
Wins.
Yeah.
Scores 1.
I think he just screams at them and they just run away because they're just, he's just so.
They haven't seen anyone like this.
No.
Yeah.
He's disturbing the inner peace.
Yeah.
So now we've got a war zone. Lu Da just kicks through the door.
Yeah.
And starts beating them all up.
Yeah. Again, for some reason.
That's not really clear.
There's just no controlling him. He just does all these things. Like,
it's not really clear why he wants to get back in the monastery.
Yeah, I don't.
Why he doesn't want to just sleep it off outside.
Yeah.
Why he is just wants to beat everybody.
I think he just didn't want to be told no.
Yeah. If anybody tells Lu Da no,
yeah,
his first instinct is just to punch them in the face or kick them in the crotch or whatever.
Whether they have actually went by saying no, presented him with a more reasonable solution that will also benefit himself as well.
Especially if he's drunk.
Yeah.
So
I think war zone is quite a good description for it.
So the abbot comes though and can calm Lu Da. You know, maybe because he has an aura of majesty. So Lu Da basically is like, okay, you know, I'm sorry. I'll sleep it off. The rest of the monastery is pretty upset.
Can you blame them?
They're like, look at this. This is what the abbot says. It's true he's a bit unruly, the abbot admits.
A bit?
Yeah. The abbot.
He beat up the whole temple, basically.
No, we're going to get to where he beats up the whole temple. Okay. He's only
half
beat
the
up.
The temple now. Yeah. Only the employees.
Yeah, only the employees. Yeah. But he'll become a saint later on. He's a promising young man, Sherry.
I don't see how he's going to become a saint.
Well, you know, maybe he's, you know, we'll see, I guess.
Yeah.
At present, we can do nothing. We must forgive him for the sake of our donor, Squire Zhao. I'll give him a good lecture tomorrow, and that'll be the end of it.
Mm.
So the monks laughed coldly. Our abbot isn't very bright, they said amongst themselves.
Yeah.
So he's got to go talk to the abbot tomorrow. So the abbot sends someone to find him, and Lu Da's urinating behind the temple.
Yeah.
As he does. So he gets dragged to the abbot for a lecture. He promises to behave and never does it again. The abbot even gives him a nicer robe and a pair of shoes to kind of like save face a little.
Mm.
Gives him some gifts. 3 or 4 months pass. Lu Da gets bored again. Okay.
He was bound to.
Yeah. He's on a scenic stroll admiring the beauty of Mount Wutai when he hears clanging metal. Turns out there's a whole village at the foot of the monastery that Lu Da didn't know about.
Mm.
And it's got shops and inns and taverns and all the things that a town would have.
That Lu Da has left behind.
Yeah, left behind. This is the material world.
Yeah.
Right there at the foot of the monastery.
Yeah. And he's like, wow.
So first,
this is what I've been missing.
Yeah. And so first he goes to the blacksmith where he heard the metal clanging and he orders a monk's knife and staff.
Yeah.
So the staff is going to be like a big, you know, like metal staff, right? And it's will have ornaments on it and stuff. And it's one of the things. It's normally not supposed to be a weapon, but it is a thing that, you know, you
can a common choice
identify
weapon,
a monk
a tool.
With. Yeah. But so I didn't know what a monk's knife was.
Yes. So that is called jie dao in Chinese.
Mm.
And it's a knife that is usually only permitted for tailoring, shaving, chopping wood, cutting up food. Exaggerate.
Because it's not.
Because there is a use for a knife in a, you know, the monks have to, you know, they have to live.
Yeah.
But it's what is not allowed to be used as
killing.
Is to kill.
Mm.
That's going to surely follow that rule, I think. And since it's not used to kill, it usually has a flat tip rather than a pointy one to just symbolizes its purpose. Obviously, it has an edge, you know, that's going to be sharp. Practical use is not the only use of this knife, though. It has a spiritual symbolism.
Mm.
Okay? So here's where I introduce the story.
Okay.
Of Da Zu Hui Ke, the second pariah of the Chan Buddhism, the Chinese brand of Buddhism.
Okay.
Okay? So he, obviously, you know, we know there are different brands of Buddhism.
Yeah.
Different chapters.
Branches.
So the Chinese branch, that's, you know, maybe they have a family tree. So this guy is the second pariah of the Chinese Buddhism, and apparently the 29th pariah since the Gautama Buddha, aka the Buddha.
Mm.
Apparently there is one Buddha that's the Buddha. So the legend has it that the first pariah first pariah of the Chinese Buddhism initially refused to teach this guy the ways of Buddhism. Mm. And Hui Ke, the guy, stood in the snow outside of the first pariah's cave. I don't know why he was in a cave, but he was.
No earthly attachment.
Exactly. Sure. Yeah, right. So he stood outside all night until the snow reached his waist. And in the morning, the first pariah asked him why he was there. And he said he wanted a teacher to, quote, open the gate of the exhaler of universal compassion to liberate all beings.
Oh, wow.
Quote, big goals. But the first pariah refused,
mm.
saying, how can you hope for true religion with little virtue, little wisdom, a shallow heart, and an arrogant mind? This is wow. really putting this guy down, right?
Yeah.
It would just be a waste of effort. Seems like Lu Dao a little bit.
Yeah.
But finally, to prove his resolve, Hui Ke cut off his arm. Hui Ke took the knife that he carried with him at his waist and cut off his left arm and presented it to the first pariah to prove his devotion.
Yeah.
Which is a weird move, but it worked. The first pariah goes, wow, okay, you know, I take this as a token of your sincerity and I'll accept you as a friend. I'll accept you as a student. And so he was given the name Hui Ke, which means wisdom and capacity. So
that's interesting.
Back to the knife.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting because there's similar stuff in the Bible too, of like if your arm sins, you know, cut off your arm, you know, there's,
yeah,
you know, so it seems like it's kind of a universal
story.
Yeah, in a way, yeah.
So a universal method to prove your devotion.
I don't think Lu Dao didn't even want to cut off his beard to prove his devotion.
No, exactly. But I think that the symbolism of the monk's knife is also like, yeah, it's a knife, but remember the sacrifice of the, you know, the devotion of the second pariah, and you're not supposed to use this knife to like hurt other people.
Well,
it's a symbol of your spirit.
Well, maybe it's going to be a symbol of how far away Lu Dao is from that.
Yeah, no, exactly.
Because Lu Dao is very certainly going to use the knife to... And I get the impression... So we're going to talk about his staff he orders.
Yeah.
But I get the impression he gets like a sword-sized monk's knife.
Yeah.
Because it is described as a sword sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
So...
But the stick that he...
Yes.
He ordered.
So he goes to the blacksmith, he gets the monk's knife, he gets the staff.
Mm-hmm, the staff, sorry.
And he says he wants one that is... 100 caddies.
Yeah.
Now,
which is
about 100 pounds, a little over 100 pounds.
Mm.
So let's say 50.
Which is very heavy.
Say 50, maybe around 50 kilograms, something like that. So very heavy. And also remember, you know, this is a staff, so like you have to like hold it out, right?
Yeah.
And like, you know, so even if you could pick up a 100 pound thing, which is not that hard to do, you're not gonna be able to like swing it around and hold it out and stuff.
Yeah, but
so,
this is Lu Dao we're talking about.
I know.
Of course he could.
So the blacksmith says, look, you know, even Guan Yu, they use Guang Guang in here, which I think is just another name for him.
Mm-hmm.
But Guan Yu, famous Liu Bei's companion from Romance of the Three Kingdoms.
Yeah.
God of War.
God of War, yes.
Big beard.
Yeah.
A lot of statues
big
of him,
dude.
You'll see.
Yeah.
Even Guan Yu's halberd was only 81 caddies.
Yeah.
And Lu Dao's like, well, Guan Yu was only a man. I'm just as good as Guan Yu. Right? And
so you're not supposed to be arrogant.
Yeah, well, blacksmith as well. We're going through all of the sins right now.
Yeah, we're
But the blacksmith talks him down and says, how about 62 caddies, which is, you know, Lu Dao goes, okay, fine, you know?
Yeah. I do think it's a thing in this book that like Lu Dao and several other hero characters, like it would be described that they prefer heavy, like it is a preference that they prefer heavy weapons.
Yeah. Because they're tough dudes,
yeah,
Cherry.
Because they're tough dudes.
Right? They're not like little dainty people swinging around a little
light,
little Dao,
light,
a little
light
saber.
Sword or anything. Yeah,
yeah. No. These are huge.
He needs a men's weapon.
Yeah.
Apparently.
Just a big stick.
Yeah.
Now he's trying to find wine.
Yeah. Again.
Now, no one will sell him wine, right?
Yeah.
After
last time.
One also, for the same, they won't sell wine to any monk, right?
Right.
For the same reasons.
Yeah.
Eventually he realizes he should lie and just say he's a traveling monk. And, you know, in that, you know, I'm from another monastery and our monastery is
so
allowed
break
to
break the
wine.
Rules, it's fine.
Yeah.
Sky's high, the emperor's far away.
Well, you know, and also, you know, maybe some monasteries let you drink wine. How is an innkeeper going to know, right?
I think that the rule of the Buddhism is pretty universal at this point especially a town where there is a monastery.
Well, you know it works. So sure. Maybe the innkeeper's just scared of him.
Yeah.
He finds a shop and he drinks 10 bowls of wine. 10 big bowls of wine.
Okay.
I'm not sure what the bowl to bucket ratio is. So
yes.
Maybe at the time people would be aware of how big a big bowl of wine is.
Yeah. But let's just say a lot of wine.
Yeah, I think like a ramen bowl of wine. So he asked for meat, and the guy's like, "Oh, I don't have any meat.
Mm-mm.
I sold it all earlier." And then Lada smells meat, and he's like, "What's that in the back?" Mm-hmm. And the guy's like, "Oh, I'm boiling a dog." And he's like, "I didn't think you'd want any." So I don't know if it's just because it's meat in general, or if maybe the dog was considered
like a lower
class, or maybe meat. But regardless, Lada's like, "No, I love dog. Give me the dog."
Yeah.
So Lada starts chowing down on half of a dog. Then he drinks 10 more bowls of wine.
Okay.
He puts the remainder of his dog in his robes as leftovers.
Okay.
And then against the shop owner's protests, he gets a bucket of wine.
Okay. So we're really, it just goes up.
20 bowls of wine and a bucket.
Yeah.
So Luda is incredibly drunk now.
Yeah.
He heads back to the monastery and decides he wants to exercise. So he's like... swinging his arms around and doing all this stuff.
Yeah.
But Lada is such a huge...
huge dude.
Guy.
Yeah.
And a reincarnation of a heavenly spirit.
Sure, yeah.
Or maybe he's an earthly fiend. I don't know which of the two categories he is. That he smashes his arm...
yeah.
...into the roadside pavilion on the way up to the monastery.
Yeah.
And basically just, like, destroys the pavilion.
Yeah.
Just by swinging his arms around.
Yeah.
This wooden pavilion. The monastery guards hear the noise... and realize Lada is drunk again.
Yeah.
And this time, they just go inside and they lock the gate.
They're like, there's no stopping him. Yeah, let's just hope that the gate will stop him in.
So they decide to just lock the gate. Lada is mad they won't let him in. And it's a Buddhist monastery, but it's not a fortress.
Mm-hmm.
So the gate has like statues on it and idols and decorations and stuff.
Yeah.
And Lada just starts tearing it all apart and smashing it all up. And smashing it all off the gate.
Yeah.
Because he's mad. Yeah. They won't let him in.
He's quite literally like taking down the roof over this monastery now. He's
desecrating the temple.
Yeah.
The monastery starts panicking. And the abbot's like, it's fine. We'll just make Squire Zhao pay for it.
Yeah.
And this is what the monks say. They say the guardian idols are the lords of the gate, the monks protested. You can't just change them around like that.
Yeah.
You know? It's like saying like somebody's burning Bibles in the parking lot of the church. And you're like, we'll buy more Bibles.
Yeah.
It's just stuff. It's just stuff, Cherry.
Yeah.
So
it's just earthly attachments.
Yes, exactly. So
Squire Jaw's rich. It will be fine.
We'll get more idols. Never mind the gate idols, retorted the abbot. Even if they were the idols of the leading Buddhas themselves that were destroyed, there'd be nothing we could do about it.
Yeah.
Stay out of his way. Didn't you see how savage he was the other day?
So he might just be right.
So now the abbot is like, okay, fine.
Yeah.
But
this is a bad situation, but I can't do anything.
I can't stop him. Yeah. You can't stop him.
Yeah.
Like, all we can do is just kind of wait and see what happens.
Yeah.
So what a muddle-headed abbot, the monks muttered as they left the hall. Don't open that gate, they instructed the gatekeepers. Just stand inside and listen. If you mother-screwing scabby donkeys don't let me in, bellowed Sagacious.
Yeah.
I'll set fire to this stinking monastery and burn it down.
Sagacious.
I know. So they decide to let him in.
Yeah.
So they let him in. And it's sort of a comical description of how they pull the bar off the gate and Lada's pounding on it. And when it opens, he's drunk. So he just falls on his face.
Yeah.
Like on the floor from when the gate opens. So Lada... stumbles to his room. They all stay away from him,
mm-hmm.
probably wisely, because if there's anybody there with a stick,
Lada's
probably going to want to fight them.
Yeah.
So they just ignore him. He stumbles to the meditation chamber, which is a group living area,
mm-hmm.
and he just immediately throws up all over the floor.
Yeah. Can't take this Lada anywhere.
Yeah. The dog leg he was eating earlier falls out of his robe.
Oh, no.
And he starts eating that too. He's like, oh, great.
The secret's out.
He's like, I was hungry.
Yeah.
Then he starts shoving the dog meat in the mouths of the other monks that are trying.
I was so shocked when I read that. I was like, not only he is messing up his own spiritual journey.
He's ruining everyone.
He's ruining everyone else's. these poor monks have like practiced meditation and tried to be spiritual for so long, try to better themselves. Now they're forced to eat dog meat and like break all the rules.
Buddha is shoving the material world
yeah.
into people's mouths.
Literally, yeah.
So, and then when people try and stop him,
yeah.
he starts like drumming, like, you know, like with his hands yeah. on the bald heads of the monks, you know?
Yeah.
He grabs them, it's like patting on their heads.
Yeah.
Okay, so now the monks get serious.
Yeah.
They form a squad.
Okay.
This time, this is from the book, the supervisor and deacon didn't notify the abbot, but summoned all the monks on duty.
Mm.
Including...
Like they have to form a small militia just to deal with Lu Da. Sagacious, sorry.
Yeah, sagacious Lu. Including every caretaker, cook, janitor, and sedan care chair carrier they could muster. Nearly 200 men in all.
Okay.
So this is now not just the workers, but the monks too.
Yeah.
They bound their head with bandanas, armed themselves with clubs and staves, and marched on the monks' hall. So now they put on their headbands.
Yeah.
They're like, we have to stop Lu Da.
Yeah.
There's no choice.
Yeah.
Our spiritual journey depends on it.
Yeah.
Lu Da starts beating them up.
Yeah.
He rips the legs off the tables in the room
that
I assume have all the little, like, you know, probably have incense on it and stuff. So that all goes everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
He rips the legs off the table and he's like dual wielding them.
Yeah.
And hitting everybody with the chair legs. The abbot has finally had enough.
Yeah.
He goes in there. Lu Da calms down. And Lu Da was so drunk that he's like, abbot, help me. I can't control myself.
Yeah.
I'm too drunk.
Yeah.
So the abbot's like, okay, you're going to spend the rest of your time at the monastery in my room.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to figure out what to do with you.
Yeah. And does the room have this calming effect?
It seems to. It has like an aura.
Okay.
You know? That, you know,
spiritual aura.
Lu Da can always calm, or the abbot can always calm Lu Da down. So the thing that the abbot has had enough about is not that Lu Da got drunk.
Yeah.
It's not that he beat up all the other monks.
Yeah.
It's not even... that he like crapped on the floor.
Yeah.
It's that he drove all the other monks out of the meditation room.
Yeah.
Which has probably had an unbroken string of meditation in there.
Yeah.
For hundreds.
God knows how long.
Could be 1,000 years.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And Lu Da, with his drunken dog eating antics.
Broken the record.
Broken the chain.
Yeah.
This is where one of the Buddhas actually found enlightenment in this room.
Mm-hmm.
That's a serious crime.
Yeah.
So the abbot writes a grumpy letter to Squire Zhao.
Look at this cousin of yours.
And Zhao's like, yeah, I'll pay for it. He's basically kind of like, well, do whatever you got to do.
Yeah.
Squire Zhao seems kind of done with it as well.
Yeah.
So apparently also the abbot has written letters every time Lu Da has done something bad.
We learned. Okay.
Yeah.
Unbeknown to us.
Yeah.
He's been building up the case.
Yes. Abbot decides to write a letter of recommendation for Lu Da to another monastery far away.
Yeah. He's once again getting referred. I don't know if off the chain this time. We've got to read the next chapter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But he says he was guided by a dream.
Yeah.
I suspect the abbot was not guided by a dream.
No.
I think he just told Lu Da,
yeah,
I've got a prophecy for you, Lu Da.
Yeah.
It involves not being here anymore.
It involves this very concrete plan.
Yeah. It involves being someone else's problem.
Yeah.
Is the prophecy I receive.
Yes.
So.
Oh, it seems very practical, a prophecy.
Yes.
Mr. Abbott.
And I want to read the ending.
Okay.
The ending bit here because
sure.
I think it's funny. So this is, because, you know, we don't always read them, but we have these little chapter ending little teasers that they put.
Yeah, which I like.
Because again, this is a consumer product, right? This is not at the time period, right? The water margin. It's designed to be
enticing
and engaging, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, it's quite possible even that, like, for example, maybe sometimes it was sold in installments. You know what I mean? And you got to buy the next one.
Yeah. No, also, like, think of this as stage drama, too. They play it out and then it's like, you know, this is the break and you come back next Sunday. I don't know.
You
got to
pay another couple copper coins if you want to hear the reading of the next chapter.
Keep them wanting more.
Yeah.
So what does it say?
So the abbot pointed at sagacious Lu and spoke. He told him where to go. With this result, laughing and wielding his staff, Lu Scott fought scores of heroes. Angrily stabbing with his sword, he struck down unfilial sons and treacherous officials. What exactly did the abbot say to sagacious Lu? Read our next chapter if you would know.
Yeah.
So I like how Who is he stabbing with his swords? Unfilial sons and treacherous officials.
Yeah.
So if you're not respectful to your parents, Lil Da's going to come for you.
Yeah, apparently.
Although Lil Da doesn't seem to be the kind of guy who would be that concerned about filial duty.
Doesn't seem like it, no. Or just respect in general.
Yeah.
Towards anyone.
Any sort of hierarchy or
yeah,
anything like that.
Yeah. It's just too rigid for him, Ali. It's too rigid.
Well.
So that's chapter four.
Next chapter, also going to be a Lil Da chapter. So please look forward to that as well.
Yeah. Lil Da is so far our most... Like, the hero that we spent the most time on.
We're going to spend...
This is a big name.
A lot of time with Lil Da.
Yes.
He's quite a character.
Yes. What, do we want to do a sound effect for Lil Da?
Do we? What would the sound effect
be? I don't know.
I could do applause.
Okay.
I could do a trombone for... Do applause for Lil Da. Yeah, Lil Da. Wow. Okay. Anyway, thank you for listening.
Yeah.
We really appreciate it. I think we're having fun talking about the water margin. Quite a few people have told me that they're... reading the book as well. So
yeah, we appreciate you following along.
It is quite a long book, but we're going to get through it. So we appreciate that. And also thank you for anyone who's rated our podcast or left a comment anywhere or reviewed us. We really appreciate it.
Nothing means more.
Nothing means more. Well, we don't make any money. So so even just seeing if anybody reads it or listens to it, enjoys it is the only thing we get out of it. So it's always is appreciated. Well, anyway, please look forward to more episodes and we'll see you next time.
See you next time.